everyone, and welcome back to Murder, Mother and Me, where each week we will dive into some of the most infamous murders, mysteries and everything in between.
So if, like us, you are intrigued by all things true crime, you're in the right place.
I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm your other host, Patty. I'm the mother.
And I'm the me.
As always, thank you for all the support so far on our podcast.
Please don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Murder, Mother and Me Podcast. Share with your friends and write us a review.
But only if it's a good one. This is a case that takes place in 1998. Here is an interesting fact about that year.
HBO premiered the first episode of Sex and the City, a groundbreaking series that explored the lives and relationships of four women living in New York City. You love Sex and the City, don't you?
I still love it now.
I also need to confess that I thought it was Sex in the City. I never knew it was Sex and the City.
I think that would work as well.
Yeah, it would, to be fair.
Because that is what it's about, isn't it?
I have a little hometown story about Sex in the City as well. One of my friends that I went to school with, Peter Daly.
Oh, not Peter Daly. The fish,
shout out, Peter Daly.
Man.
His cleaner was the sister of Kim Cattrall.
Good God. That's a really tenuous connection, isn't
I know.
It?
Anyway, that's
I think,
all I've got to
I actually
say.
Think I remember that story from a while ago, but Peter Daly. I love Peter Daly. Love you, Peter. Right, everyone, let's get on with this week's episode. And this is the mysterious disappearance of Amy Lynn Bradley. In March 1998, 23-year-old Amy Lynn Bradley mysteriously disappeared from Rhapsody of the Seas, a Royal Caribbean cruise ship, just as it was docking off the coast of Venezuela. Her family has never stopped searching. If she's still alive today, where is she? But before we go any further, let's go right back to the beginning. Amy Lynn Bradley was born on May 12, 1974, in Petersburg, Virginia, to Ron and Ivor Bradley. She grew up in a close-knit family alongside her younger brother, Brad. Her parents describe her as strong-willed, independent, and highly aware of her surroundings. She wasn't someone who would take unnecessary risks or put herself in danger. Amy had an adventurous spirit and a deep love for animals. She was an exceptional athlete in high school, excelling in basketball, and later earned a degree in physical education from Longwood University. She was outgoing, confident, and had a promising future ahead of her. At the time of her disappearance, she was preparing to start a new job, and by all accounts, she was excited about the future. One of the most important details about Amy is that she has several distinctive tattoos. A Tasmanian devil spinning a basketball on her left shoulder, a sun on her lower back, a gecko lizard on her stomach, a Chinese symbol on her right ankle. These tattoos are significant because in the years following her disappearance, some alleged sightings of Amy involved women with identical or similar tattoos. The Bradley family's vacation aboard Rhapsody of the Seas began on March 21, 1998. The ship was a massive floating resort, complete with pools, restaurants, nightclubs and entertainment. For the first 2 days, everything seemed to be going smoothly.
You've never been on a cruise ship, have you?
No, I don't really... I don't like them, really. I mean, they're just big... They're just an accident waiting to happen, aren't they?
Well, when they describe it as a floating resort, that is literally what they're like.
Yeah, but have you seen how many people are on board them as well? And they're so big and you're just floating around and there's all kinds of diseases on them and... Ooh, I don't know, you're all squashed. It's like Butlins on water, really.
Well, it basically is a floating hotel. That's exactly what it is. Except you just can't get off unless, obviously, you're docked. But when me and Olivia went on the cruise ship that we were working on, I think there was 3,000 people on, and apparently that was a smaller ship of the fleet. So, I mean, I think there's some cruise ships that go up to maybe 9,000 people.
There's like a really big one, and it's like the biggest of all cruise ships, and I've seen it, and it's like about 10 stories high or something, and it's just jam-packed with people, and you just look at it and think, there's no way I'd get on board that, I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, if you're on like a smooth sea, you really wouldn't know any different. You don't feel like you're moving. You don't feel like you're on board anything. You do just feel like you're walking around a hotel resort. It's the most bizarre thing I think I've ever experienced.
Yeah, I don't see the appeal, really. You might as well just go to a hotel. But I suppose you're taking different countries, don't you, and things.
I think the appeal is that you dock in multiple different places so you can get off and see... Well, it's like multiple holidays in one, really, isn't it?
Amy and her family participated in typical cruise activities, relaxing on deck, dining together, and enjoying the nightlife. Amy, being friendly and outgoing, quickly made acquaintances with other passengers and even some of the ship's crew members. One notable group she interacted with was Blue Orchid, the ship's house band. she was seen dancing and socialising with Alistair Douglas, the band's bass player, who went by the nickname Yellow. Several witnesses recall Amy being friendly with him, though there was no indication at the time that anything was amiss.
Didn't you say there's some CCTV footage or something of those two dancing together in one of the clubs?
Yeah, there was CCTV footage of the disco part, and I think the band were, you know, they probably were off duty at that point and came into the audience and it just turned into a disco. I think that's what it was, and she was just dancing away there, and there's a little bit of footage of her from that night.
I mean, it's not actually hard to mingle with the staff on a cruise ship either, because like you've just said, once they're off duty and stuff, they kind of just wander around the ship anyway. They go and drink in the bars, they go and eat in the restaurants. There is a crew quarters as well, but I think a lot of them do come into like the passenger areas, so that doesn't seem weird to me at this point.
No, it's not like going to a concert, is it, where, you know, the band's on stage and then they go out the back way and get on a bus or whatever, plane or something to go. So they're all just stuck there together really, aren't they? On the night of March the 23rd, the Bradley family went to a club on the ship. Amy and her brother Brad stayed out late, drinking, dancing and mingling with fellow passengers and crew members. By around 1:30 a.m, Brad and Amy decided to head back to their cabin. At approximately 5:30 a.m. on March the 24th, Amy's father, Ron Bradley, briefly woke up. He saw Amy sitting on the cabin's balcony, seemingly relaxed. Thinking nothing of it, he went back to sleep. By 6 a.m, Ron woke up again, and this time Amy was gone.
So when you're on a cruise ship as well, when you scan your hotel key on the door, it actually registers the time in like an automatic system of what time you swiped your card. So I believe that her brother Brad swiped his card at 3:35 a.m. to go back into the room, and then Amy's card was swiped 5 minutes after that. So when her dad's woke up at 5:30, she's been asleep on the balcony, but then within half an hour, she's now completely gone. Do we think she could have just got up and walked out of the door past him while he's been asleep, or has she climbed over the balcony into someone else's balcony?
Well, I think if she's got in through the door and walked past him and gone on the balcony, then, you know, she could also walk back out past him without him waking up. But then did she go overboard from that point, or, you know, can you get into somebody else's cabin from the balcony?
The balconies, from my experience on a cruise ship, I'm sure every cruise ship's slightly different, but you could literally just hop over into the next person's balcony. It wouldn't be that difficult and it wouldn't require a lot of skill. But I think, you know, as of now, we know she was definitely on her balcony at 5:30.
Her shoes, cigarettes and room key were still in the cabin. This was highly unusual. Amy never went anywhere barefoot. If she had left voluntarily, she would have taken her things. Her parents immediately knew something was wrong.
So at this point, she's been asleep on the balcony. Her dad's seen her there. And then within 30 minutes, she's either gone over the balcony, she's left the room again, but she's left her shoes behind. That's even more weird than leaving her cigarettes and her room key. Because, like, I always walk out of my hotel room and leave my room key by accident all the time. So that doesn't strike suspicious to me, but leaving your shoes behind. So she's either gone out barefoot or she's gone out in her socks.
Yeah, but if because if she's been out and she's come in and she's laid down on the floor on the balcony, you know, she's probably taken her shoes off to be comfortable. And then if she's got up and decided to go somewhere, I mean, who knows what she was thinking? She might have been going back out to meet a friend or something.
Yeah, and you think maybe she's a bit drunk, so she's got her shoes, basically.
I don't think it's something you do, is it? Put your shoes back on if you were a bit drunk. You'd just wander out, wouldn't you? And then on cruise ships, they sort of wander around till all hours, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, if I'm not wrong, it's like a 24-hour thing anyway. Like, there's casinos on board and stuff like that. And honestly, people sit in those casinos literally 24 hours a day. So it's not abnormal to be seeing people walking around at 5 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Maybe with no shoes on is a bit weird, but who knows what's going on.
I mean, she's had a couple of hours sleep, so maybe she's thought, I'll go back out and have a bit more of a good time.
I wonder where she was going.
Maybe she was going to meet this fella she met in the band, the bass player, Yellow. By the time Amy was discovered missing, Rhapsody of the Seas had already docked in Willemstad, a picturesque island known for its vibrant Dutch colonial architecture and bustling port. The ship was scheduled for a routine stop, allowing passengers to disembark and explore the island. Amy's family immediately reported the missing case to the onboard crew, where they pleaded with the crew members to keep the 2,000 passengers from disembarking the cruise and to make an announcement to assist in finding Amy. However, the team at the purser's office informed them that it was too early to make a ship-wide announcement. The crew agreed to issue an announcement at 7:50 a.m. after a majority of the passengers had left the ship, announcing Will Amy Bradley please come to the purser's desk?
I mean, I think that's really, really terrible, to be honest, that the ship have said, sorry, it's too early for us to make an announcement over the, you know, the tannoy system.
But I wonder how many people they have with this kind of situation, do you know what I mean? Maybe people are wandering off all the time and they just kind of make it a rule that if they've not returned by then, because most people normally turn up. But you think with it being a ship and being by the water, obviously that's always a possibility that someone could go overboard. So you think they'd err on the side of caution.
And then to just do an announcement like, will Amy Bradley please come to the desk? Like, it's just like she's gone wandering off us. I mean, maybe she has, and maybe to them at that point it's not that serious. Maybe they do have loads of cases of stuff like that, but well, I guess if you're the family in this situation...
Yeah, but don't forget, they're well aware that people have been drinking, and there's probably people around that are just slumped in corners and things, drunk, you know, and sleeping off, or they've gone to other people's cabins and things. So that's probably their first port of call, isn't it? Putting a general announcement out to alert her that someone's, you know, concerned that she's missing it.
I think when you're the family, it probably just... it's a bit frustrating. In fact, it's probably very frustrating when you know that... well, you know your daughter, don't you? So you know that she's probably not just going to be slumped in a corner somewhere. You know that she would usually be where she needs to be.
Well, of course, your mind's going to go to all the horrible possibilities that might have happened as well. But to the staff, it's just another passenger, isn't it? That, as I say, it's probably happened quite a few times before, so it's nothing new to them. Between 12:15 and 1 p.m, the crew's staff searched through the ship but could not find Amy. The delay that the crew put on the search and investigation of the disappearance has been said to have led to lowering the chance of finding Amy by ignoring the Bradley family's advice and allowing the passengers to disembark.
Yeah, I think that was also something that I wanted to say then as well. I think there was 2,000 people on this ship. Who knows what, you know, what they're taking off the ship? I mean, again, when you go on and off a ship, you have to go through, you know, like airport scanners kind of, so... it's really hard for you to smuggle things on and smuggle things off.
But you're not talking about today. This was in 1998, so...
that's also very true.
You know, things were quite different then, I think. And ships, you know, are a law unto themselves, aren't they? Because aren't they only registered in the... at a certain place, do you know what I mean? So when they sail the seas, they're sort of not governed by any particular place until they dock, are they? I think that's what it is anyway.
Well, I think also allowing that many people to get off the ship, I mean, I'm imagining probably not all 2,000 people got off, because when you dock, not everyone gets off. Some people decide to stay on board and stuff, but even the fact they let anyone get off that ship, who knows what kind of evidence they're taking off the ship with them?
Well, there's probably all kinds of exits, isn't there? There's exits where the public leave. And let's face it, if you wanted to smuggle a person off a ship, it wouldn't be difficult. You'd just stick a big straw hat on them and put their arm around your shoulder. You know, if there was two of you, you could walk them off, couldn't you, really, without anyone really being any the wiser? But also, if somebody else was taking her off through one of the staff exits, which maybe where they bring cargo on or off, I don't know, things like that, you know, there's obviously other quarters to the ship where she could have been hidden and then taken off. That wouldn't be hard either. So instead of locking that ship down before anyone disembarked, it really should have been said, shouldn't it, before that happened?
I mean, I think that's a massive error in the investigation straight away, is because it leaves so many things wide open now that, you know, a lot of could haves, a lot of should haves, a lot of what if this happened, what if that happened. They'll never know now because all those people have got off the ship and who knows where they're going. But I think when you were saying about smuggling someone off a ship, then again, we're back in 1998, but I know now every passenger on board the cruise ship has like a cruise card. And that cruise card is almost like your identification that you are actually, a legal passenger on that ship. And when you get on and off, when you get on and off the ship and you're docking, you have to scan your card along with your passport. So they've got like a record of everyone getting on and off the ship. I don't know if that's always been the case.
That's definitely not been the case. That not back then, I don't think, because otherwise they'd have been able to track all these people, wouldn't they? I mean, don't forget, there's people on that ship from all different countries and, you know, and then they go off and wander around the port and probably, I don't know whether some actually get off there, disembark there completely at different places. I don't know. But it would have been very easy, I think, to get it off. Or was she still on the ship and just hidden somewhere at that point?
I mean, yeah, that's also an option. And I think maybe that's why these procedures are now put into place with everyone having a cruise card and stuff like that, because of situations like this.
The Dutch Caribbean Coast Guard conducted a four-day search that ended on March the 27th, 1998, and Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines chartered a boat to continue looking for her. The Coast Guard used three helicopters and a radar plane to assist in the search. Initially, the authorities suspected that Amy had either fallen overboard or died by suicide. However, this speculation was soon discredited as Amy was known to be a strong swimmer and her body was never found in the waters, as well as no evidence of foul play.
I never really understand that when people say that they would rule out that she's fallen overboard because she was a strong swimmer. I mean, listen, if you're falling, I mean, I don't know what floor she was on, but if you're falling from a great height into the sea and there's a cruise ship, you know, passing next to you, I think the likelihood of survival is slim to none. So I don't really know what relevance being a strong swimmer has, because if you're sucked into those propellers underneath, what does it matter if you can swim or not?
Yeah, and I guess, horrible as this sounds, if a body was mangled by that, it would probably have been eaten by, you know, sea creatures and stuff.
And also, you know, how many times have you heard of people falling overboard on a cruise ship or just off a boat in general and they're never found?
Yeah, I think even as you hit the water, it's like hitting cement, isn't it? So if she was like rendered unconscious, you know, she could have just gone under. And it's so deep, isn't it? You know, there's currents underneath. So, you know, the body doesn't always turn up.
I mean, I'm not saying that I think she has fell overboard or that she's committed suicide, but I'm just saying that strong swimmer argument never really does it for me, because I think there's so many other factors that play into it than just whether you can swim or not.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think you can rule suicide out more or less, because she was on a family holiday. Her family know better than anybody, and there didn't seem to be any indication. And I know there isn't always, but the majority of times there is. That doesn't seem likely to me. In the years following Amy's disappearance, multiple witnesses came forward claiming to have seen her. In 1998, a Canadian tourist in Curaçao claimed he saw a woman resembling Amy on a beach with two men. She appeared distressed, as if she wanted to say something but was too afraid. In 2005, the most chilling potential evidence surfaced, a photograph known as the Jazz Photo. It showed a woman resembling Amy in a sexual slavery advertisement. The woman had identical tattoos to Amy, and experts believe it could be her. These sightings fueled a terrifying theory. Amy was abducted and sold into human trafficking.
Now, just before we started recording this, actually, you showed me this picture, this Jazz Photo, which is the famous photo in this case, and I'll upload it to the Instagram so that everyone can see it, side by side with a picture of Amy. And I think there's no denying that it's got a very, very strong resemblance.
I think it looks identical to her. She's just a bit thinner in the face, but she's a little bit older as well. And if you look at the features of this woman, I mean, to me, there's no doubt that it's her.
Which is quite chilling, really, isn't it? Because that would mean that somehow between that 5:30 and 6 a.m, she's gone on a wander somewhere. I don't think someone's like snatched her from the balcony or anything like that. I think she's been wandering around the ship, you know, in a drunken state, like you've said. And I think someone said, oh, do you want to come and, I don't know, have a drink, or do you want to come to my room or whatever? And she's been abducted.
For it to be like human trafficking, I think someone has had to have had their eye on it earlier on in the evening. I don't think it'd just be like, it could be like a random, someone just snatched it because it was just a vulnerable female. I don't know, I just think, you know, the way she was in the disco and you could see her friendly with the band and things. I think someone was watching her, and who knows, maybe she'd arranged to meet somebody later on. She said, I'm just going to go back to the cabin for a bit of a sleep. I don't know how she would have woke up on time, but, you know, maybe they were aware that she was coming back at some point.
Well, I think that's what they do, isn't it? From what I understand with, like, you know, sexual slavery and human trafficking and stuff, they get targets and they stalk those targets and they snatch them when the time's right, because it's not always the right moment to grab someone, I would imagine. So I think they do like tail them almost for however long it takes.
I suppose a cruise ship is a perfect place to do that, because the guard's down, you know, there's a lot of alcohol involved. There's multiple chances, I think, to be able to abduct somebody, loads of places to hide them. And especially if you've watched somebody and you've kind of thought there's a perfect time because we're docking tomorrow to get her off the ship. And there's also a little bit more to this case in that when they went ashore to look for Amy, her brother Brad thought he heard Amy shouting from the back of like a transit van. And he swears to this day that it was her, but I think it had already gone by the time he alerted his father, I think it was, you know, when they were trying to find the van or follow it or whatever. But, you know, for all they know, as they were getting off, you know, she could have been getting taken off at the same time from another point and put into this van, and the van's got to drive away, and it could really have been Amy, couldn't it?
I think on a cruise ship, there's ample opportunity to grab people, but it's also really risky as well. You know, there's a lot of, like we said, there's a lot of people walking around at all hours in the day and in the night. So I think it's really risky to snatch someone on a cruise ship, and this is only 1998. I would imagine that CCTV was a thing, whether it's as advanced as it is now. I'm sure they had some cameras on board, so it's a really risky place to grab someone, I think, personally.
I don't think it's risky if it's somebody who actually works on the ship, who's aware of where the CCTV cameras are and knows all the areas that somebody can be hidden and knows exactly when to do it.
I was just going to say, I think the only option for me is that it had to be someone that was familiar with the layout of the ship, how they can get people off a ship without anyone noticing, and, you know, even just somewhere to hide someone or anything like that. I think it's got to be someone that either works on the ship or is very familiar with the layout of a ship.
Yeah, with the layout and with the comings and goings on the ship. You know, they'd know exactly where everyone would be more or less at a certain time, wouldn't they? And something like human trafficking, it's not just a random tourist going on board, you know, and organising something like that. Although they may have people on board the ship as tourists, mightn't they, you know, to sort of help. I'm sure it's like some kind of big operation, isn't it? Involving more than one person is what I mean. So it's probably a network of people.
Oh yeah, 100%. These human trafficking rings are exactly that. They're rings, aren't they? There's hundreds and hundreds of them that go around and, like I said, target these usually young girls that they can sell for money.
Well, they've got an agenda, haven't they? They probably need to be within a certain age range, a certain look, you know. And they've got like sort of a big pick of people on a cruise ship. There's bound to be women who fit that description, what the description they're looking for, I mean.
I'm just wondering with this photo, it says, you know, it's the biggest piece of evidence in this case. I wonder why they've never been able to definitively say if it was her or not. Because as far as I'm aware, they've never actually said 100% that it's her.
I think, you know, with facial recognition and everything, maybe now they could probably do that. But maybe that was just in its infancy in those days. But I think what happened was they tried to pinpoint where this came from, and because it was on the internet, I think the site was taken down. And I think that's what they do with this kind of, I don't know that much about human trafficking, but I think they move people around, so it's really hard to pin them down. So if anyone does detect them in some particular place, they're going to then move them onto another place swiftly, you know, and it's really hard to track them down that way.
Didn't you say something about the family hiring some kind of private investigator or something to try and find her?
I think he was some kind of army person, an ex-Navy SEAL or something, and he contacted the family and said that he could have people on the ground looking for her and track her down, and then he kind of found out where she was, and she was being held by these, something like Colombian drug people or Colombian people anyway, and he was going to sort of initiate a rescue. But all he did really basically was to drain them of money, and it never really came about, it never got to that, you know, so...
Yeah, I think it said they paid them something like $210,000. Which is a lot of money.
Yeah, but you would, wouldn't you pay, if you thought somebody could get it back, you would pay them anything, wouldn't you, to get it back? But all he was doing was just sort of feeding off their desperation, really.
So I'm guessing in the end, he was just lying about the whole thing and he never could actually rescue Amy.
It sounds like it. I mean, I don't think any of that was true.
So he was just a fraudster, really, and he was just taking the money?
Yeah, just a con man.
That's just terrible, isn't it?
Well, it is, when people are already in despair, you know, and then he just adds to it by doing that.
It says actually that he was he pleaded guilty in the end to mail fraud and was sentenced to 5 years in prison, and rightly so, I think.
To this day, Amy Lynn Bradley remains missing. Her family has never given up hope, and her case is still open with the FBI, although she was declared legally dead on 24th of March 2010. The question remains, is she still out there? If she was taken into human trafficking, could she be waiting for someone to find her?
So I think we're both in, you know, agreement that she was taken into human trafficking, or at least that's what we think happened.
I think that's the most obvious conclusion you can come to with this case.
I think when you see that picture that you've showed me, there is no denying that it looks pretty much identical to her. And I think that is such a massive piece of evidence in this case.
Can you put a link in this episode?
Yeah, I'll upload both pictures to the Instagram page so that you can see it for yourself and you can see the resemblance and come to your own conclusions. But I just think... You know, personally, I think someone was working on the ship or had good knowledge of the ship, and they've spotted her, they've kind of marked her, and they've found a perfect opportunity to grab her while she's been a bit intoxicated, and somehow they've got her off that ship and they've put her into a human trafficking ring, and that's what I think's happened here.
Well, she was an outgoing and friendly girl, wasn't she, as well? So she literally could have been talking to anybody on that ship and she wouldn't know that there was, like... They had ulterior motives for speaking to her. So they could have actually set her up, really, and arranged for her to come back and meet somebody. And then, you know, that was it for Amy, wasn't it?
I still think you know, with the technology that they have these days, with like photo recognition and facial recognition and stuff like that, surely they've done some tests on the on that photo that they found online to kind of see the similarities and see if it is actually her.
I think maybe they wouldn't kind of say 100% that it was her. Maybe that's what it was. I think if family believed that it's her, though, and they'd be the best ones to recognise it. If you look at the features, there's a way that they do it, isn't there? They line up, you know, the ears and the length of the nose, and it even looks like it just looking at it. But if you even compare those features side by side, they look as if they're identical. And I think that's just a bit too much for it not to be true.
So if she went missing in 1998 and she was only 23, that would make her, I think, pretty much nearly 50 years old now. So I'm assuming if she has been tucked into human trafficking, they're not going to have much use with a 50-year-old. But that doesn't mean to say that there's not a possibility that she's still alive. You know, 50 is not even that old, so...
No, but it makes you wonder, though, doesn't it? Why did they not go back to the family? But I think the way it works is she's probably been drugged up and everything. She might not even know who she is anymore.
I was just going to say, they probably spend majority of however long they're in captivity, because that's what it is, drugged up to the eyeballs to the point where... Yeah, they probably lose memory.
There's a shelf life, I think, isn't there? Sad to say, but I would think they would not want to risk anybody being able to identify them or where the operation takes place and things like that. So, but I don't know. You know, as I say, they probably do drug them, and then they might end up living their lives as drug addicts, and just, like, a lot of them might overdose. I don't know enough about it myself, but it sounds logical, doesn't it, to conclude that?
Well, I mean, I was just going to say, I think the family have probably come to the same conclusion, and that's why they declared her dead in 2010. Because I think, you know, probability and the likelihood of her being alive is not very high. It's not to say that she's not, but, you know, I just think, yeah, like you said, I think those type of situations, they view the girls as having a shelf life, and they don't want to risk being caught. So I guess although, the easiest way is to dispose.
Although, did you say that the family's not giving up hope? But I think... when they declare somebody dead, I think it's to wrap up all the legalities of it and everything as well. But I think without any body and no proper evidence that, you know, she was dead, I think he would always have that hope.
Right, everyone, that's it for this week on Murder, Mother and Me.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next time.
And remember, if you can't do the time,
don't do the crime.